Hello, everybody, and welcome into the Apples and Junos Fantasy Hockey Podcast. My name is Nate Grootniblink, and I will be your host. I also have my guy, Josh Hutchinson, here with me. Hutch, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, man. I'm excited to talk some best ball.
Yeah, so today we are talking about best ball drafts. We are currently running best ball drafts in the Apples and Junos Discord server. We're going to be doing this all off season. You can check the show description if you're listening to this on iTunes or on Spotify. Check that show description. There's a link in there to join the Discord community, and you can join us in these best balls. It's also an easy way to stay up to date on all things Apples and Junos, all the content we're putting out there. But really, it's just right now to do fun stuff like best ball drafts in August. Let's get into best ball as a format. I want to explain that a little bit for you. So basically, it's a format that's really popular in fantasy football. It's really exploded over the last year or two, I would say. But for whatever reason, fantasy hockey always seems to like catch up to these things maybe a year or two later. So I think it's going to become more and more of a thing, but we're running them on Fantrax. Basically, it's still like you have a daily lineup, but the computer sets it for you. So basically, there's no in-season management. You don't do trades. You don't set a lineup for each and every day. The computer sets it for you. It just figures out who the best players are at each position, and it sets the lineup for each day based on their output and like how many fantasy points they score. So what we're doing in Apples and Junos Discord server is running $5 leagues, so they're pretty affordable, so we can all join a bunch of them over the summer and not feel like we wasted our entire life savings on it. The format we've got going for roster, we're going two centers, two left wing, two right wing, four defense, two skater slots, two goalies, and then 10 bench. You usually have a big bench like this just so that A, injuries don't hurt you too much, and also you can kind of take these shots on fun breakout guys. And we're also using a point scoring setup. It's the easiest way to run best ball with point scoring. We're using a setup similar to Kakupful. It's not really a heavy bangers weight there. I'll give you the breakdown here. Goals is 4.5 points, assists 3. Blocks and shots on goal are both 0.5, hits 0.25, so half of blocks. And then shorthanded points are also 1 point. On the goalie side, you get wins and shutouts, both 2 points. Goals against minus 1.5, saves 0.3. So we're going to talk a little bit about the first draft, which is already concluded, the Apples and Junos best ball draft number one. Josh, you were in this draft. How was your first best ball experience?
It was good. It was a lot of fun. Definitely a learning experience. I don't think it went quite as well as I had hoped for myself. But yeah, it was my first ever best ball draft. So, that's to be expected. It's definitely a bit of a different strategy, I would say, than maybe a redraft or a dynasty draft. But it's a lot of fun. It's a good way to get the rust off. And these Apples and Junos, best ball drafts are really good, really low risk. It's a lot of fun to be drafting in August. So if you're as crazy into fantasy hockey as Nate and I, it's a fun thing to do to shake the rust off and get ready for the big drafts and maybe a little bit later.
Yeah, it's definitely a little different to be doing it in August. I'm not completing my projections for the season, so I feel like I'm drafting a little bit naked and
totally, not
really understanding where I should be valuing these guys. But that's all part of the fun. So just kind of relying on what I remember from last year and what I thought about sustainability and unsustainability over the course of the season from these guys and what I think they'll do next year. But I don't have projections done for most of the teams still. So definitely a little bit flying blind. So let's talk about, we'll just throw out some topics. Who is the best team you thought, Josh, out of these? We did a 12-team draft. Who is the best team that you saw?
I'm really into Deco's team. They actually picked first overall, so they got Connor McDavid. So obviously, any team with McDavid probably has a bit of an advantage. Second overall got Jake Guentzel. That's a pretty solid pick at 24th overall. He's gonna get you if he's healthy. He's gonna get you 40 goals, 80 points. Mm-hmm. He's got the number two defenseman in Victor Hedman. Jason Robertson, I think, was a bit of a steal in the fourth round. Morgan Riley, Nazem Kadri, wherever he ends up, sounds like maybe the Islanders. We don't really know at this point. Jordan Kyrou in round 7. Thatcher Demko, he's like a huge volume starter. Ended up going with Demko and Ottinger back-to-back. It was back-to-back picks. He had that advantage because he picked first overall. And that ended up being really smart because there was a huge goalie run after that with all the high volume starters. So and I think Demko and Ottinger are going to get a lot of starts there on pretty decent teams that are going to be battling it out for the playoffs. So I think pretty good value picks, especially that late. I think it's funny that in an Apples and Geno's listener draft, you expect that everyone is going to go 0G, and that is kind of the way that it went, at least until like round 7 or 8. There was only really Shesterkin and Vasilevsky that went in the first 6 rounds. Mm-hmm. So that wasn't a huge surprise. That was the way it went in the Patron League last year.
Yep.
Brock Besser, he's a great pick. I'm really high on Vancouver this year, as and that was evident in my picks as well. Claude Giroux in round 11, that's really good too. That's really great. Shane Gostisbehere was, Arizona is the same coach going into this year, so you can probably expect for him to be playing PP one time. Mm-hmm. Tyson Barry, that's a pretty good value pick at 13. Michael Bunting, that's huge. He's going to be playing on the top line again, I would imagine.
Sean Durzi, like that run, actually, now that I'm looking at
it. Yeah, really, really good.
Barry Bunting run there. Especially in a best ball league, like, you know, the thing with guys like Shane Gostisbehere and Tyson Barry is that they're always going to have that stretch during the season where you're like, man, I can't even be rostering this guy. Like, what's he doing? He's not scoring points. He's not doing nothing for my team. But in a best ball format, like, it's hands off. Like, you're just looking for the end of season points, right? So I don't mind them there. And Tyson Barry, I think a lot of people are anointing Evan Bouchard as the power play quarterback there, but Tyson Barry was it for Jay Woodcroft. I think Tyson Barry,
it's not set in stone.
Yeah, I think Tyson Barry is being pretty underrated, to be honest. I did my Edmonton projections already, and Tyson Barry came out pretty well, I'll say, because I do anticipate he's going to take at least the lion's share, maybe not the entire season, but at least the lion's share of the power play time from Evan Bouchard over the course of the season. So I like that stretch there. And yeah, Michael Bunting, 168th overall. You really got to like that. You got to wonder if he can even improve on what he did last year, given a full season to work on the chemistry and everything on that top line. He seems pretty locked into that role.
Absolutely. I also want to highlight at in round 16 and 17, he or she, I'm not 100% sure, took Cal Peterson and Jonathan Quick. That was actually a strategy that I had considered going with a little bit earlier in the draft, just because I waited a little bit too long to pick a second volume starter. So I was like, okay, there's not really any other options here. Pretty much all the big volume starters, at least from what we expect, have been taken. So I got to change my strategy. LA, both their goalies are there. They're pretty much a tandem. We don't know who exactly is going to get the edge there. So I think I was like, okay, maybe a good strategy would be to take two of them. I ended up going with instead Pavel Francouz in Colorado, because I think that goaltending situation is a little bit up in the air as well. They're talking about Georgiev being the starter, but if he falters, I think Francouz is there, and they're used to him.
Yep.
And so I felt like that was a good situation in Colorado. And then Anton Forsberg fell to me in round 15. And I think he's probably going to get the majority of starts, maybe a little more than half. That'll be a tandem with him and Talbot. Mm-hmm. But I think he may get a run there. So I was a little more excited about Forsberg falling to me there. So, but I really like, that being said, I really like Peterson and Quick. That was definitely in my wheelhouse at one point in the draft. So I was impressed that Deco went with that as well. Andre Palat again, late in the draft. Ryan Strome in round 22. Anaheim has the most off nights out of any team by far this year. Mm-hmm. So in best ball, that's huge. because he's going to be playing on nights that where the other centers aren't playing. So that's a really nice pick as well. I was zeroing in on Anaheim players for that reason. Didn't end up getting, I think I only ended up getting one of them. It's a good idea in best ball to be picking up Ducks, even though there's not a huge number that are going to bring you a ton of fantasy value. But I really like Deco's team. Who do you like, Nate?
Yeah, my favorite team, I think, is going to be Sauch. I don't know if I'm saying that right, how it's supposed to be pronounced, Sawch. I think they had a really solid draft. I really like he or she, again, don't know, got stacks with both Florida players and Boston players in the top four rounds. So I really like that. Throughout, just a lot of kind of upside picks, which I think is really key in the format. Going some form of 0G, Ilya Sorokin in the 8th, which I'm okay with at that point, especially given the format. Georgiev in the 12th, if he pays off, he's going to pay off huge at that point. Mm-hmm. Lots of upside guys, Sam Bennett in the 11th, Mason Marchment in the 14th, Jacob Vrana in the 15th. Just lots of guys who have the potential to outperform where they were drafted. So that's kind of the reason I went there. It was really tough, actually. I kept looking through the teams and being like, oh, that team has some things I like, some things I don't. That team has some things I like, some things I don't. So I do think there was a lot of parity in this draft, which was pretty fun. I don't think anybody ran away with it from the draft. But I think it'll be interesting to monitor over the course of the season. And I think probably the teams we think are the best probably won't be the best by the end of the season. That's usually how these things end up, especially when you're drafting in August. So
it's hockey. You just don't know.
Yeah. So we'll see. But let's talk about the biggest steal of the draft. Do you have a candidate for the biggest steal at any point?
I felt like there was lots of steals, and that's for a number of reasons. I think the main reason is because in Fantrax, they don't allow dual eligibility.
For best ball.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. So that made it a little more complicated. And I definitely had to alter my we're altering our strategies constantly because you have to pick a certain amount of centers, certain amount of left wingers, certain amount of right wingers. And some of the choices for Fantrax weren't necessarily entirely accurate, in my opinion. There were a lot of people listed as centers that I didn't think were centers, and in various ways in terms of forwards. So I think a lot of people fell just because I think a lot of people, a lot of fantasy managers were trying to draft for position to make sure that they're not being at like having a deficit at any one position. So you actually got Patrick Kane in round 4, which I think is interesting. Patrick Kane's a bit of a wild card this year. We don't really know what's going to happen with him. We don't know if he's going to get traded. He probably will before the end of the year. I think you could easily get lots of value for him, but we just don't know who he's going to play with. So it's kind of hard to project what his point total is going to be like, but getting him in the 4th round, I mean, that's probably the lowest draft position he's ever had in fantasy since probably his rookie season. So that's that could potentially be a really great steal in round 4. I think Kenny got Braden Point in the 8th round, which I think is a huge steal. Braden Point, a bit of an overrated fantasy player in my opinion. I've talked about this before on the podcast, but in round 8, I think that's a pretty good position for him. A guy I was considering around that time, but he got sniped right before me. I think Kenny picked right before me that round. Duchess, I'm not sure if I'm saying that correctly, but he or she got Jesper Bratt in round 10, which I think is going to be a really good value pick. Jesper Bratt, I think New Jersey is only going to get better offensively. They were pretty good last year, and if they stay healthy, Bratt's going to play with Hughes all year. So that's going to be a good situation for him, playing on PP1 as well. The sky's the limit for Jesper Bratt. Odd Pounding got Kopitar in round 12, which I think that's a huge pick, especially with Kevin Fiala probably playing on his line 5-on-5 and on the power play. I think Kopitar is going to likely have a huge year this year. And then the last one that I marked down here was Hop 74 got David Perron in round 13. I think that's really good value as well. Perron's going to, I think he's going to play on PP1. I don't think that's
I think that's why you get David Perron.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. And he just fits so perfectly with that crop of forwards. Playing that left wing on the power play for that one timer, which is exactly where he played in St. Louis, and he was money. So as long as he stays healthy, he's going to be a great pick. So in round 13, that's quite a steal. What about you, Nate?
Yeah, I really like the Kopitar pick. I hadn't done my projections for LA when the draft was going on, but I've since completed them, and I have Kopitar projected for exactly 82 points over an 82-game schedule. So I definitely think that Fiala helps him a lot more than Alex Iafallo did last year. So I think that's a huge pick in the 12th round. Robertson at 412 I really like, because I do think Robertson is an elite converter. He's shown that through 2 years now. I don't think it was just a flash in the pan from his first his rookie season. So I really like Robertson at 412. I think he could even have another gear and get up into 100-point-plus potential. That's speculation, really, but at least he's got the kind of profile, the elite converter profile, where if he ever adds a few more shots per 60 kind of thing, then he really becomes an elite player. And then Arturi Lehkonen in the 21st round. This is a guy who fit further up the lineup in Colorado, and he got paid this offseason in Colorado. He was on my list to draft. But he got sniped from me
too. Well,
21st round. I don't know if you can call it a snipe, but HSPU's Mark got him there. So that's one that I was definitely looking at. And I think that one will definitely pay off 21st round draft position, and probably would pay off a lot higher as well. How about a biggest reach? Any big reaches on players sticking out to you?
Again, like I felt like this was a very shrewd draft. Like a lot of the fantasy managers, I think if you're listening to a fantasy hockey podcast, you're probably pretty hardcore. Just trying to get every inch possible. So a lot of these fantasy managers were very skilled. So there were not a lot of huge reaches. I think the only and I hate to call Kenny out here. I don't think this is, because this could be a huge value pick, our TikTok boy. But I possibly Tim Stützle getting picked by Kenny in the 6th round before Norris, before Drake Batherson, before Claude Giroux is probably the closest thing to a reach that that I noticed. Mm-hmm. But really like that could pay off. I don't think. Especially if he ends up on PP1. I don't think he will, just because there's such a glutton of talent at forward now in Ottawa there.
Yeah.
But I think there is a potential for Stützle to take a huge jump this year. I just am not sure that I would be picking him that early.
Yeah. Yeah, there are a couple for me. Early goalies are always going to be on my list for reaches, but I think it really got exacerbated in this draft. Shesterkin went in the 3rd and Vasilevsky in the early 4th in this draft. And then the next goalie didn't come off until you took Saros in the 7th. Mm-hmm. So to me, that's a really big spread, and they have to absolutely be insane to cover that spread just in draft position alone. So I think that's going to be just really tough. Like, they basically have to repeat Vezina level. Like, Shesterkin has to do his full-on 930-plus save percentage act again, and that's just something I will never bet on with a goalie. Even if he's terrific, like, he could be absolutely terrific and get a 925 and not be that much different from a lot of guys who went in round 7 and round 8. So, goalies are always going to be up there for me.
Shesterkin scares me because he... I mean, as well as he played this year, as much of a historic year that he's had, he's done it once, right? So that's the one thing, like seeing him go first out of any goalie. I mean, if I'm taking a goalie in the third round, which I probably not, I'm taking Vasilevskiy. If both of them are still available, I'm probably going Vasilevskiy just because I like Tampa's situation a little bit better.
Yeah. That's an interesting point. I honestly never really think about Shesterkin and Vasilevskiy just because I know I'm never going to be drafting them where they're going. but I think I'd take Shesterkin over Vasilevskiy, but they're definitely kind of a tier of their own at the top, in my opinion. The only other one that I will point out here, Kyle Connor going at the 12th pick overall, last pick of the first round. To me, I wrote about the coaching changes happening, and I think Winnipeg is going to roll their lines a little bit more, and Connor was really heavily used by Paul Maurice and by the interim coach, whose name I am sadly forgetting.
Dave Lowry.
Yes, Dave Lowry. Thank you. So I think Connor's ice time and opportunity is just going to be reduced, and it's going to be pretty hard for him to pay off first round draft capital just because of that factor alone. So that would be some things for reaches. Most interesting build overall. Obviously, when you're talking about best ball, you got to build your team a certain way. You got to cover all your positions and cover them for the whole year right in the draft. So build is definitely a point of interest. What was the most interesting build you thought?
There weren't any crazy builds. Again, like I felt like everyone kind of drafted very similarly. I think the Zero G award actually did not go to you. It was Hops 74 who didn't pick a goalie until round 12, and that was Jordan Binnington, but that may hurt because his goaltending situation is not the best beyond Binnington. I think Binnington was probably the goaltender that was guaranteed to have volume that got drafted the lowest. And then he had Vitek Vanacek, which isn't a bad pick. Eric Comrie, I think, is like
you're projecting a bit.
potentially high value pick, but that's a little bit scary. Peter Mrazek, which is going to get volume, but on a really, really bad team. Coming off of a brutal season. And then Philip Gustafson, which isn't a terrible pick in the last round. He's going to get some starts in Minnesota. But yeah, I think Zero G is tough. You picked goalies back to back in rounds 10 and 12. Hook and Scramble and HSPUs also outweighed you in terms of goalie selections, picking their first goalie later. In the 10th round after Nate picked Tristan Jarry, which kind of kickstarted a goalie run. I thought that was pretty funny. After you took a goalie, everyone was like, oh shit, I better take a goalie. But then the other thing that I noticed was Binksy, our boy Binksy, loaded up on bangers on D for those 0.25 hits. A little bit higher than I would have taken them. He had Radko Gudas. Let me see. He picked what, second? Radko Gudas in the 12th round, which isn't terrible. And then Yanni Hakanpaa in round 14. So he was really going for the bangs mid rounds. So that I think was a bit of an interesting strategy. It's too bad we couldn't have him on today to discuss that, but just something I wanted to highlight. What about you, Nate?
Yeah, that was an interesting one for sure. Another interesting one that I saw was HSPU's doing kind of a D fade. Petrangelo in the 6th, and then no more D until the 13th. Josh Morrissey, Noah Hanifin, Gustav Forsling, Hampus Lindholm, Brady Skye. How do you say that name?
Brady Shea.
And Matt Roy filling out his roster. So that's a really interesting strategy, and one I don't think I agree with for the format.
That's a tough decor, in my opinion.
But we'll get into that a little later as well. he also took three goalies in a row, 10, 11, 12, rounds 10, 11, and 12, Jack Campbell, Sergei Bobrovsky, Matt Murray. Definitely high upside picks there, so I don't hate that. But it's just kind of interesting, right, to see three goalies in a row after fading them to the 10th. So that was an interesting team. And just kind of one broad takeaway from the draft. What did you learn from this draft?
Oh, man, I was altering my strategy constantly. I didn't have any draft rankings going into this. I just went in cold, kind of was going with general feel, which I haven't done in a while. So, I mean, there were a lot of situations where there was a player that I was targeting, but I was like, I think I can probably wait a round or two before I go for them. And then someone would snipe them. Essentially either right after I let them go or right before I was going to pick. So that happened probably 7 or 8 times. So I think going into best ball two, I'm probably going to pull the trigger a little bit quicker. I was wary of reaching for players, but I think I might reach a little bit more, maybe. Be a little bit more liberal with that. There's a lot of smart fantasy hockey players in this league. Like I mentioned before, there's if you're seeking out a fantasy hockey podcast, you're probably pretty intense about fantasy hockey. So I'm not really that surprised.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, I'd say you have to draft for value, but definitely the position scarcity, like you alluded to, with every player only having one position assigned to them because of the best ball format on Fantrax, that really messed with it. And so I ended up prioritizing right wing early. I got Patrick Kane, Sam Reinhart, Brian Rust, because that position
definitely was a scarcity for right wingers. Yeah. Like I struggled with right wingers.
Yeah, it really fell off a cliff not long after that, I feel like. So I felt pretty good about getting those three when I did, and then it was a little bit easier to fill out the other positions a little later on. So yeah, you always want to draft for value, and you don't want to like reach past somebody who's a screaming value just because of positional scarcity. But in this format, it really kind of felt like you had to at least actively think about right wing specifically early and often. So that was kind of interesting and a little bit more based on feel than I like to be. Usually I like to have some numbers to back up my takes, but that's kind of all we have in August. So that's where I'm at as of this point. And, you know, if we get to a point, my projections come through and I'm starting to think, you know, I have a few guys at right wing that are really kind of big time sleepers and I can wait and feel pretty good about the right wings I'll get a little later, then maybe that changes. But yeah, just my kind of hot take right off the presses after finishing this draft. That's kind of how I felt. So if this draft at all sounds like fun to you, you definitely should join the Apples and Genos Discord. We have 11 of 12 for Apples and Genos best ball number 2 already. So we're just waiting on our 12th and final manager. By the time you listen to this, that may already be filled, but not to worry. We are going to keep running them. We'll run a 3rd and a 4th and a 5th. As long as people keep signing up for them, we will keep filling them. So definitely get into the Discord server and definitely sign up for the next best ball draft.
So we're going to pivot a little bit here into just some general best ball theory or best ball strategy. So this was my first best ball draft. I think I have a few takeaways from it, but Nate, I'm not sure how much best ball experience you have with fantasy hockey. But is there such a thing as an optimal roster construction in this format?
Yeah, I definitely think there is an optimal roster construction. I do play a lot of fantasy football, and as I mentioned, best ball is growing to be a huge thing over there, and it's a huge part of fantasy football best ball strategy to think about optimal roster construction. There's whole articles and spreadsheets shared about the winning percentages of teams that went with certain number of quarterbacks, certain number of running backs, certain number of wide receivers. So I definitely believe that that will carry over to fantasy hockey, and there is such a thing as optimal roster construction. That optimal roster construction will have to be based kind of on the scarcity of fantasy points across positions and how you attack that. So For example, in this format that we have set up where there's 24 total roster spots, you know, we're starting two centers, two left wing, two right wing, four defense and two skater slots plus two goalies, and then the rest is bench, and they obviously get worked in whenever they outscore the first few guys you draft at those positions. So like the optimal construction may be six centers, four left wing, four right wing, six defense, four goalies. That might be the best roster construction. I don't honestly know or have a strong opinion currently on what the best construction is. I do have a feeling that in positions of scarcity, you kind of want to load up early. And then in positions of wealth, you can afford to kind of just go with a volume approach on positions of wealth. So specifically center is, especially on Fantrax currently, it seems like everybody's a center, even if we might think they played more wing than center. So definitely, I think you got to look at any position that has a lot of depth to it. You can probably afford to kind of punt that position a little more and take a few more late guys at that position because you're just going to kind of fill your lineup day to day with the guy who scores a goal that day, right? And as long as you've got guys who are scoring goals on a reasonably consistent basis, that's fine. Whereas if you try to do that with defensemen, I don't think you're going to find guys who are scoring goals from defense all that often. So I think you got to prioritize that position a little more. So I think there is such a thing as optimal roster construction. I don't currently have a really strong take on what that construction might be, though.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. I think you're right about there being a ton of centers being available. I think the fact that guys like even Ryan Johansson got picked in the last round. We're looking at,
I took Adam Henrik.
Adam Henrik. And I mean, he's a solid, like in a 12 team redraft league, he's a solid streamer. Mm-hmm. So I think the fact that you're getting him in around what, 24?
Yep.
Is pretty solid. So, I think you're probably right about taking more centers than maybe others and maybe fading them a little bit later. And there did seem to be a scarcity in right wing and D. I think if you have an opportunity to take a guy like Cale Makar, which I did, maybe a little bit higher than I should have, or a Chris Letang like you did in the third round, I think that you would benefit from that for sure, because they're going to be, as long as they stay healthy, really good point getters. So in terms of off nights and roster maximization, how does that affect your strategy going into these best ball drafts?
Yeah, I think it should affect your strategy. I don't think I employed this part of it all that well in this particular draft.
Yeah.
So like we said, your best players are being calculated daily. So if you have three guys up for your center slot, one of them scores 7 points, one of them scores 6 points, one of them scores 2 points, it doesn't matter that that guy only scored 2 points, because you're only counting the guy who scored seven and the guy who scored six. So players who have lots of off nights will not sit on your bench, right? They're going to play on those off nights, and whatever points they do get you, even if it's only 2 points, they actually count towards your season end totals. So players with lots of off nights will score you more points than, you know, your fifth center who doesn't actually get into your starting lineup all that much. So I think that's really an important thing to be looking into. And like you said, Anaheim has 45 off nights in the upcoming season, and I believe Arizona is next with 38. So
yeah, it's not
Anaheim,
even close.
Like Anaheim players should honestly, in a best ball format like this, should probably go like a full round earlier than you think. Like, I'm not sure where Zegras went in this one.
Oh, it was like seven or eight, I think.
Yeah, well, that would make sense here to me. But wherever he went, he probably should have gone higher, to be honest, just based on the format.
Yeah, he sat there for a while.
And
10, round 10.
Yeah, like Zegras in this format, I think I projected him Let me check where I projected him for a second, actually. I have him projected for 80 points this upcoming season because I think he takes a little bit more of a step and he gets a bigger share of power play time specifically. So I think Zegras is a really, really good bet. And in round 10, that's an absolute smash. Honestly, I'd probably have him in like round 6 or 7, especially considering these off nights. So I really think that's a really key portion of this. So yeah, Anaheim at 45, Arizona is next at 38, so a significant drop down there, but still you want to target Arizona guys. Winnipeg Jets, 37 off nights, Rangers, and I believe Colorado, yeah, both 36. So those are kind of your top teams on off days, and you should definitely be targeting those guys in this format.
So is there a specific way that you should be drafting in order to guarantee that you win these best ball leagues?
Yeah, I think it comes down to kind of a philosophy of drafting like you're right. So think about your first few picks that you're going to make. Those are probably going to be kind of set in your rankings. You're not going to deviate too far from your rankings in the early rounds. But what makes those picks right? What's the scenario in which those picks hit to the extent that you're going to win? And then draft subsequent picks to align with that outcome. So what we're going to talk about specifically in regards with this is stacking. So I'm really going to advocate that you stack players. And what I mean by that is you take players whose outcomes are aligned by being on the same team. And obviously, if they're on the same power play unit, if they're on the same line, then their outcomes are kind of tied together in that way. So if Sidney Crosby has a terrific year, then Jake Guentzel is going to have a terrific year. Like, those two things are pretty much hand in hand.
And Brian Rust.
Right. So what I did in this draft, and I wish I had done even more of it, but I got Chris Letang in the third round. I took Brian Rust in the seventh, and I took Tristan Jarry in the 10th. I took Jeff Petrie in the 13th. So I have four players from Pittsburgh. I actively targeted Pittsburgh players because I'm kind of, by making these choices, I'm betting on Pittsburgh having a good season. I'm betting on Chris Letang scoring lots of points and Brian Rust being on that top power play and also scoring lots of points and Tristan Jarry being a beneficiary of that and winning lots of games and scoring me fantasy points. So all of these things kind of working together. Jeff Petrie is kind of an interesting one when you already have Chris Letang, because Jeff Petrie's kind of top 5% of outcomes, if you view all the outcomes for his season, from like an absolute terrible season where he only scores like 15 points to an absolute monster season where he scores like 60 points. That 60 points only comes if Chris Letang gets injured. So in some ways, I'm kind of handicapping my upside with the Jeff Petrie pick. But I do think Petrie has enough standalone value to be worth where I picked him in the 13th round in this draft on a team that scores as well at 5-on-5 as Pittsburgh does. So I did that. I got Kane in the 4th, as we've mentioned, and I followed that up with Seth Jones in the 8th. Obviously, also both going to be on that top power play in Chicago. I don't feel super comfortable about being married to Chicago's success in scoring goals this upcoming season, but it kind of is what it is. So when I was looking between, I forget who else I was looking at, when I was looking at Seth Jones, there was another player on the board. I went with Seth Jones specifically because I already had Patrick Kane. And so I was betting on Kane already having a good season to win this league. So if Kane has a good season, I think Seth Jones probably has a good season as well. So it makes sense to take him there.
Seth Jones is also going to play like 30 minutes a night probably in Chicago. So, so what about floor versus ceiling? So I think, and I think based on the way that everyone drafted in this first best ball draft, I think a lot of people bet on floor early in the draft. We talked about that because there weren't a lot of reaches. Mm-hmm. What do you think about in terms of drafting floor versus ceiling and where you start to pivot in terms of what you're targeting there?
Yeah. I think it's important in the early rounds to not to not really deviate from the best players just because they've been around for a while, they're veterans, and you kind of know what to expect from them. I definitely went really veteran heavy in the first few rounds of my draft. I didn't even really realize I was doing it. It was just kind of who's the best player here, and I was taking them. I went Ovechkin, Stamkos, Letang, Kane, Pacioretty with my first five picks, so definitely some old fogies on the squad here. So definitely later on, once you get into the double digit rounds, I really think that there's going to be players from these later rounds, even the mid rounds, but there's going to be lots of players who severely outperform where they were drafted, and those are going to be the players that actually win you the league, right? Your players that you draft in the first few rounds, you want them to return that value or something close to it. But they're not, like, if Alex Ovechkin, I pick him at pick 9, and he performs as, instead of the 9th best player, he performs as the 15th best player next year in this setup. Like, that's not going to make or break my season. Like, the only way Ovechkin really ruins my season is if he falls off completely and he's terrible, which I don't think anyone really sees happening for next year. But when you get into these later picks, you really want someone who you can see a path where they absolutely crush where they're drafted. So in a lot of places, I went with a guy like Ryan Hartman in the 14th round. It seems like everybody's just kind of off him. I guess maybe Marco Rossi, everybody anticipating that he'll show up and quickly unseat Hartman for the rights to play with Kirill Kaprizov. I don't know if that happens right away. I'm happy to take Hartman in the 14th because I think he has a really good chance to significantly outperform that position. Nick Suzuki from Montreal, now that Cole Caulfield's in the show full-time and seems to be ripping things up under Martin St-Louis, and they draft Yuri Slakovsky, maybe he gets on that line. There's been some talk of that already. So I think Suzuki could outperform 15th round. Lots of guys like this. Anders Lee in the 19th. Brendan Gallagher in the 21st. I grabbed my guy Arthur Kaliev in the 23rd just in case that 30-goal prediction actually comes true. That'd be pretty awesome. And then I went with Adam Henrique in the 24th just for those off nights. I couldn't pass it up in the 24th round. So thinking about players who in that top percentile of their range of outcomes, what do they have a true breakout potential where they could really, really outperform the spot where you're drafting them at? That's what can really win you these leagues, I think.
Yep, totally. I totally agree. I actually took Marco Rossi in round 21 because I feel that he's going to play a significant role in Minnesota this year. They don't have a lot of depth at center. I don't think they want Eriksson Ek in the top six. So mm-hmm. I think he's going to take one of those top two line center roles.
And the upside there is huge. Like I think that's a great pick in the 21st round. Like that's the kind of thing that you want to be into in the 21st round for sure.
Yeah, he's a legit Calder candidate for sure. But don't load up on all those Calder candidates though, because that's a little bit scary.
Yeah, you still need guys who are going to score points at the bottom of your lineup too, because they are going to work in, especially on those off nights and stuff like that. So don't draft only those guys, but definitely work in some of those guys who can absolutely smash where you draft them at.
So this is a little bit of a loaded question because I think it depends on the situation and who's available when you're picking, but when are you targeting D?
Yeah, so we alluded to this a little bit before. D gets really thin, especially in a point setup like this, right, where it the banger's weight isn't super intense. So once you get past kind of the power play one defenseman, you're really thinning out the crop of who's really even relevant for a points league like this. So I do think it's pretty important to get some pretty high performing defensemen fairly early in the draft. I honestly wish I had targeted them even a little bit more than I did. So I got Letang in the 3rd, Seth Jones in the 8th, Devin Taves in the 9th, and then Jeff Petrie in the 13th. So those are my top four. I followed that up with Giordano and Slavin in the late rounds, which I'm not in love with really any of the last three names that I named there, but they kind of felt like the best options. And the fact that they're the best options kind of tells you about how D feels later. So I really want to kind of think about guys who are going to be producing every time. Like, they're going to be in my top four defensemen every night. Like, I'm not going to be starting the fifth and sixth defensemen a whole lot. So I'm willing to kind of push them, or just like draft a couple guys from Anaheim, draft Jamie Drysdale and Cam Fowler in the last two rounds or something like that, and then have them play on the off nights and just rock with my top four who I picked all in the single digit rounds or something like that. I really think that's a valid strategy in this format, just because the value over replacement is so immense at the top. So I really think that D is pretty important in a best ball setup. The alternative to this would obviously be throwing a ton of picks at defense. I'm not sure how I feel about that, just because defense will score less points overall. So I feel like you're kind of limiting your total scoring upside if you devote more than like six or seven slots in your overall roster to defense. So I really think that the best strategy, and the strategy that I'm probably going to try to take and that I'm now announcing to the world, so I'm sure I won't be able to take in the next draft, is to try to get four defensemen in probably like the first 10 rounds or something, and just really set myself up so that those are set and forget guys. And then at the forward positions where they're by nature scoring more points, I can work in just more volume with those guys, more off nights, and kind of backfill points, if you will, at those positions.
Yeah, I definitely targeted defensemen early. As I mentioned before, I took Cale Makar with pick number five, probably a little bit higher than I should have. There were guys like Rantanen and Kaprizov and Kucherov that were available, but I took him there. I actually am pretty happy with my defense. I got Quinn Hughes in round five, Shea Theodore in round eight, who I think has a pretty good shot with a new coach of quarterbacking PP1 in Vegas.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
So I felt like that was a good value pick. And then Torrey Krug in round 12. And then funny that you should mention Jamie Drysdale and Cam Fowler, because with my 24th pick, my last pick, I took Kevin Shattenkirk from Anaheim, because I compared him and Fowler. I was debating both of them just because of their off nights, but I felt like Shattenkirk had more shot volume. Both of them were going to lose power play time because Jean Kligberg is coming into town. And then Shattenkirk had more blocks, more hits, just in terms of peripherals, he was a little bit better. Fowler may get a little more ice time, but we'll see. I don't know. It's kind of up in the air in terms of the decor in Anaheim. But yeah, I'm definitely with you on targeting D fairly early. Goalies. So in terms of goalies, I mean, obviously you're the zero G guy. You've coined that term. But in best ball, you can't stream goalies. You can't be targeting guys that are getting hot or are taking over a starting job that you didn't expect, because you draft your team and then you leave it alone. So how has your strategy changed? Because I feel like it has.
Yeah, no, it definitely has. You kind of have to toe the line in best ball with goalies. You have to find projectable volume and find guys who are going to score points for you. The thing that makes zero G work is that you can find guys on waivers who are performing just as well as anybody across the league. You can find Anton Forsberg, you can find Ville Husso. Those are guys who were just not drafted in like any league, like probably wouldn't have even been drafted in a league like this, a 24 round, 12 team league, if it had taken place the same time last year. So there's going to be guys that were not drafted in this draft that we're looking at. And they're going to be stars basically for fantasy hockey next year, but we can't predict that at this point. And I think it's kind of, pretty stupid, to be honest, to just kind of predict and take shots in the dark at who those guys will be. So I think you got to kind of toe the line and just find steady volume guys. The key is still obviously not overspending and not spending above, kind of the average line in your league, I guess I would say. So that's why kind of just the way I had things tiered when Tristan Jarry was there in the 10th. He was kind of towards the back end of what I would consider a very good starter tier. And so I felt comfortable taking Tristan Jarry in the 10th. And then Elvis Merzlikins in the 11th. I think he's just going to get a ton of volume in Columbus. Yep. And Columbus could be, you know, they've made some changes. They bring in Johnny Gaudreau. Maybe they're a new team, reinvent themselves this year a little bit, and they're a little bit better than we expect. But regardless, Merzlikins looks to be in line for a ton of volume once again. So Merzlikins in the 11th, I felt pretty good about. Everything out of Arizona says that Vejmelka is the starter again, so I took him in the 16th. A lot of off nights with Arizona as well, so I felt pretty good about that in the 16th. And then James Reimer in the 22nd for my fourth goalie. So I think kind of the strategy I went with here and that I would continue to go with is you kind of have to get yourself into a couple of volume starters and then kind of work in some guys around that. I'm really not interested in trying to predict breakouts, trying to predict that, you know, Spencer Knight will take over from Sergei Bobrovsky this year. You can take that shot in a redraft league if you want, but I'm not taking that shot in a best ball league. I just want my goalies to get volume, tread water, and then I'll win based on everything else that I draft pretty much. My entire strategy is based around not trying to predict goalies, right? Basically, yep. that's the crux of it. So the one thing that we feel pretty confident about projecting is volume.
Yeah.
And when you have a guy like Jarry, who's been the starter there for a few years, Merzlikin's been the starter there for a few years, those are the kind of profiles that I'm willing to bet on. I mean, I didn't overpay for them. 10th, 11th round, that's a good spot to get them. Wherever kind of the end of those tiers of volume starters lies, I think you want to get a couple of those guys and then kind of fill in around them as best you can.
Yeah, I think I'm totally with you there. I was just surprised that you employed that because I'd never heard it come out of your mouth. So it was interesting to see the way that you drafted in this format. James Reimer was a guy that I was targeting in that same round, and you sniped him right before I got him. So I actually went with Jonas Korpisalo. You mentioned that Merzlikins was probably going to get an uptick in volume. It is worth noting that Columbus is tied for the most back-to-backs in the league this year coming up with the schedule. So Korpisalo is going to get at least, I believe it's 16 starts. It'll probably be more than that, let's be honest. Yeah. So I think that was a safe pick in round 22. I mean, that's all we've got for this episode. Hopefully it brought you some value and helped you get just a little better at fantasy hockey today. If you are interested in receiving even more content from Apples and Genos, including guaranteed answers to all of your fantasy hockey questions, as well as first access to Nate's projections, which he's already started. I believe there's 9 teams that you've already set. Okay.
I've completed 9 teams now.
You can do that by joining the Apples and Genos Patreon, which will be linked in the show description. Many thanks to the band there for supplying the music for the podcast. Be sure to check out their Spotify as well. And that is it, folks. Have a good one.
Much love.